Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
For the rest of the segment, we're going to talk with Andrew Revkin, who's the New York Times environmental reporter. He's here in the studio to help us explain something which may actually put the lie to the assumption that we have, first of all, that the debate over global warming is settled, number one, and number two, that global warming consists of a kind of a calm, easy, but disturbing incremental increase degree by degree in temperature around the world. In fact, climate stability is maybe a more germane issue here. Andrew Revkin, if you don't have climate stability around the world, you can't predict that spring's going to be in April. You can't predict the rainfall, so that complicates agriculture. Climate stability, the loss of climate stability, has enormous global implications.
It does, and actually another issue is the lack of predictability. That actually affects these negotiations. I just was at the UN yesterday talking with the head environment minister from India. He's their negotiator. He said, you know, we still don't know what's going to happen with the monsoon. So minor question, what's going to happen with the source of rain? That's 45% of India's GDP is dependent on rainfall, he told me. So, and we don't know. So it could get bigger, smaller, more flooding, less flooding. That creates lots of issues as well. It's the details of climate change matter way more than the long-term prognosis if you're in India or Siberia or whatever.
So it's wrong and maybe a distortion to focus on these global averages when we should really be looking at regional distortions and what that's going to mean to the global political system and the global economy there as you beep, because obviously Someone is trying to get in touch with you there.
No, that's my old wake-up time. I don't normally get up this early.
All right, very good. So regional is better rather than global averages?
Well, what you're seeing now, I've been covering global warming since the 80s. And what the old question was, are we changing climate? That's an old question now. That's been answered by all these scientific authorities. That leaves the much harder questions now, which is, what do we do and where? And I've been writing a lot on Dot Earth, my blog, and in the paper recently about the reality is that it gets a lot tougher, a lot quicker. We've had a quiescent set of hurricane seasons recently. You know, the long-term prognosis is stronger hurricanes. So some of this actually sets a backdrop for these talks. Although, as everyone was saying before, the real questions are money questions. What you didn't hear a few minutes ago in the discussion about China is who's going to pay for that new technology.
Right.
And as I've written just the last couple of days, that's the heart of this issue.
And the money doesn't necessarily chase the crisis. Bangladesh has terrible problems with flooding as a result of global warming. The president of the Maldives yesterday stood up at the United Nations, or maybe it was earlier in the week, and said, we're going underwater, folks. Somebody help us out. That's a huge issue. But also the reduction of climate stability provides an argument for anti-global warming activists who say, hey, over here it's getting colder. What are you talking about, global warming? How does that create problems?
Oh, my God. Well, the big issue, of course, for President Obama in a setting like yesterday, and the reason there was a lot of voices of disappointment is because an American president is shackled by the reality that if you want to have a treaty, if you want the United States to get involved with a treaty, it needs two-thirds Senate approval. So, the health care bill is 60 votes. This is 67 votes. So even with a strong Democratic majority, he is literally shackled by that reality. And the Indian environment minister, actually, and it's something I'll be writing for the blog later today, said, you know, India and the United States are very different than China and all these other countries. We're raucous democracies, and we're hampered by that reality. So that's going to be an issue right through December in Copenhagen.
But that's the question. Is the United States going to be able to bring something concrete to Copenhagen, or is the U.S. lack of ability to do that going to kind of pull that deal apart?
Well, what you're seeing now is the realities around what can come out of Copenhagen are settling in. There was a lot of talk 2 years ago in Bali at the last big round of these talks about a deadline for the next big grand cosmic agreement. But those who really understand this decades-long process knew that was probably unrealistic from the get-go. So in Copenhagen, you'll see more steps toward
in December.
More agreements. The big challenge will be you'll see a lot of talk like what India is doing, saying, we're going to do these things domestically. We're not going to get locked in, India or China, under a treaty to any binding obligation. And Obama's people are pretty clear. They recognize in a very pragmatic way what's realistic. And they've been saying that all along.
So, Andrew Revkin, the takeaway here as we head to Copenhagen later on in the year is all climate change is local.
Yeah.
That's right. Talking about climate stability.
And response.
Indeed.
As well.
Andrew Revkin, New York Times environmental reporter and writer of the blog Dot Earth on the New York Times, a blog about humans and their effect on the planet. Thank you, Andrew.
Welcome.
Coming up, we're going to check in on the damage caused by flooding in the southeast. Speaking of local climate change, with 9 deaths in Georgia and Alabama. More details coming up in the hour. And also, we'll go to Capitol Hill and talk to D.C. correspondent Todd Zwillick about what Congress is doing on the war in Afghanistan. There's a surprise. That's in a few minutes.